Yeah, I think
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get rolling here at 6:01 p.m. Do we have all the commissioners present in the main room?
Yes.
Okay, Peg, are you good to go?
Good to go.
Okay, then. So 6:02 p.m., November 16th, 2022, special meeting for the Planning Commission. Commissioners present, Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, Colleen Thompson, John Vranth, Land Use Planner, Lee Nellis, welcome to town, and the PC Clerk, Margaret Smith, and the Zoning Administrator, April O'Neill.
Shelley.
Excuse me, and alternate Shelley Gibson. So let's see. So tonight we're going to start, just for time frame sake, to you, Lee, we're going to start with an hour of discussing the Housing Steps memo. Then at 7 p.m., I'd like to go into the public hearing on the Meadowlark subdivision. So with that, I'm not, Peg, do we need to approve an agenda officially?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to make an motion to approve the agenda as is.
Matt, I have a question. This is Shelley.
Yes.
My question is, as I went on the calendar and on our calendar and on the scheduled, what we have scheduled for the PC, and I could not see, is it being recorded?
Yes.
Okay. I cannot see where this is publicly scheduled online.
I mean, my experience is that I was on it just a few minutes ago. That's how I got onto the Zoom page that the...
Yeah, me too. I was on it too. I was on earlier and it wasn't on. It's not posted. So I wonder if this
No, it actually, it is posted.
Hey, could you confirm that when it was posted?
I got on with everybody here and it wasn't there posted for this meeting.
Are we talking about the meeting tonight on the website?
Yes.
It's right here.
Okay, go to boulder.utah.gov.
Yeah, which I did. I had somebody even help me out with it. And I went in into it earlier.
So we have two people that are on.
Okay, when was this posted? Do you know?
I initially put it up at the 10-day period to mark it as a special meeting with a public hearing involved. So it's been up for at least 10 days.
It shows okay. It posted on November 6th.
Yep. So I hope that answers your question, Shelley. In my experience, it's been legitimately up posted for 10 days. And
okay. There was a question about it because I tried to do it earlier and I couldn't find it. And then I came here and got it and it wasn't there. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so let's see, I've made a motion to approve the agenda. I'll need a second.
I'll second that. Colleen Thompson.
All right, thank you, Colleen. All in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Vranth, aye.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, part of the reason for our meeting tonight is Lee Nellis is in town and right with our housing conference tomorrow, and we're going to go over, well, I'm just going to turn it over to you, Lee, to see how you want to handle it within the time frame, and maybe you can just give us some context and tell us how you want to run through it.
Great. Thank you, Matt. I would like to start by saying I'm happy to be here and to meet those of you that I had not met before. Somehow it got to be a long time. Having a global pandemic, I guess, was part of that. But what we have been leading up to for quite some time is to talk about issues of housing and open space, the relationship between the two, as they play out specifically here in Boulder. And we've had bits and pieces of this conversation off and on for quite some time. The memo that you received that's dated November 7th was an attempt to put all the bits and pieces on one piece of paper. And what I would like to do this evening is to work through that. And as you know, normally I tend to give a summary of things and work into discussion and questions. But tonight, I feel like we have a menu of things here that needs to be, we need to be sure we cover the whole thing. So we're going to go through this piece at a time. We will take questions with each piece rather than at the end of them. Okay. And so, in talking about the ability to provide housing, however you describe it, that is attainable for people here in Boulder, we need to have some public involvement and we need to make some changes in the ordinances, or really that type of housing is not going to happen. It's just that simple. I think everybody knows that. It may be uncomfortable for some people, but comfortable or not, it's the reality that you face here in Boulder. And so let's work our way through this piece of time. When I first started working with Boulder, I received the results of a whole series of working groups that some of you served on, right? Going back to 2018. And that work was interrupted. But we're back to it. And in order to reaffirm or be sure that the public spirit of that has not changed very much, we need to have some type of public engagement in this set of questions. The most obvious thing that's been suggested is to appoint a housing working group that would follow up on what the working group that ended in 2018 did. I think that before you do that, and we'll take these first two items together here, there are some reasons why working groups are hard, particularly for the people who need housing the most. People who need housing the most work. They have kids. It's hard for them to go to evening meetings. And so I want you to at least think a little bit about whether a single event that brings people together would suffice, where you could get a lot more people than you're going to involve in a continuing working group. I'm following an effort that's really fun in the Adirondack Mountains in New York, where they've got kids coming in and writing haikus about the type of house they'd like to have, and people drawing pictures of houses. And just a really, a former student of mine is the coordinator of this, and just a really straightforward way of getting with people to express what they think. People only have to attend one of the sessions if that is what they're able to do. And we can come back to this in discussion, but I think some creativity beyond just the traditional typical committee is indicated here. And I think even more so because we're still at the point that the housing working group ended at in 2018. There's nothing wrong with what they did. I don't think the situation has changed materially since that group of people did what they did. And so why would we repeat that? Maybe we can do something more creative. The second piece of the public engagement, and then I'll take questions. We need to talk to those people in the community. We need to communicate with those people in the community who have the means to provide housing, either a land base or money. Some of those people are bigger, some of them are smaller, but what they all have in common is that they could do a project that included some attainable housing if they were properly motivated, right? And some of that motivation has to be, hey, I want to make some money. That's the way we run things in our society. Part of that motivation has to be, I want to do something good for my community. And the question is, how can the town give them an incentive? How can we enhance that motivation? And all the steps that we're going to talk about in the changes of the ordinance are aimed at answering that question in one way or another. But let's stop here and see if people have thoughts or comments about public engagement in what we're going to try to do here.
I felt like when we did the group that we did before, it was actually a change from anything that had been done before. And I think the output from that group showed us that people really responded well to it. So instead of doing the same thing, if we do something different, I'm sure we would get as much response from people if we give them something different, like you said.
Anybody else?
This is Tina. I also would like to comment that we actually did some of the things that were on that plan, and they haven't necessarily worked. But, you know, there were things that actually did come out of that plan.
Yeah, and I want to back up Tina on that just for clarification purposes. I agree with you, Lee, on the housing, not a whole lot happened, but there are many different groups, but that also led into the rewrite of the general plan and some other things. So in some places we excelled, but we didn't do so on the housing front. So I'm all for creative, something more creative, put it that way.
Okay, well, I think I pretty well incorporated your recommendations in what we have for tomorrow night. There'll be certainly the flexibility. I know with the housing providers work group, it's mostly going to be email and electronic because some of these people are out of town. Elena has volunteered to kind of head up the housing needs. And I've told her, well, it's kind of up to you how you structure it. One thing I do know is that sometimes you have to phone people and harass them if you want to get some input from them. They don't always come to the meeting. So, yes, I think we've kind of rolled your questions right into what we've got for tomorrow night, your guidance. So thank you.
No, I think that it's possible to think about tomorrow night as number one of two events. And to do a second event where there's a concerted effort to get the people who are in the housing market, potentially in the housing market, I guess would be the correct way to say it, there, even if it's just once, right? And to hear what they have to say about their aspirations. I mean, that's why this Adirondack project is so much fun, is you're letting people dream a little bit about what could happen instead of making it all bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Boulder is the right place to do something like that.
Yeah.
And there's already been a housing working group. And as Matt said, maybe those recommendations have not been acted upon, but there's nothing wrong with as far as that group went, right? There's no need to recover that ground. So maybe if Elena's in charge of that, she and I could talk a little more independently about how you might structure things. Maybe we can get to the point by the December regular planning commission meeting where we have an idea. Good?
Yeah. Good to me.
Good to go. All right, now let's start through the fun stuff. And if you've got the memo, I think Peg has got it up here for us. Thank you. We need to change the ordinances or there's not going to be attainable housing in Boulder, except by sheer luck. So here we go. I put one in here to eliminate some confusion about the number of buildings on a lot. The language that's in the present ordinance has been rendered moot by changes that have been made both about external dwelling, accessory dwelling units and the state law changes about internal dwelling units. And we just need to take that thing that says there can only be one dwelling on a lot out because it's just not true. It never was true, actually. Why is there? Who knows? But we need to take that out. Any questions?
Nope.
No.
Moving on. The table of development standards. The table of development standards is accurate if you understand what it's trying to say. But it doesn't tell you the story of what's actually allowed. Because it makes this distinction between accessory uses and principal uses. So the principal use would be one dwelling. Then you have either external or internal accessory dwellings. You also have home occupations and other stuff that you can do on residential properties, right? We have a very generous home business policy. You can do an awful lot of business activities on a residential property as fits Boulder's character. So I don't know that we know precisely how to change that table without going through the rest of the list here. But everyone should understand that the table of development standards has got to be changed so that it's useful.
Yep.
Questions?
Yep. Agree.
So now we're getting down to the stuff that actually is a change and that can engage people's attitudes and opinions. Because external accessory dwelling units are allowed so generously, because state law says you have to allow internal accessory dwelling units, and because state law also prohibits you from levying certain types of regulations on single family homes, the first idea that I have here is that we just allow duplexes by right everywhere, because you essentially do. It just doesn't officially say that.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, now, having said that, which I think is the right policy decision, okay, I don't think it's going to generate a lot of housing. How many external accessory dwelling units have been built since you allowed them? I mean, that's been on the books for a while, but they're not showing up. It's not a way that you're going to provide a lot of housing under the current economic and social circumstances in Boulder. But allowing a duplex does this. It simplifies administration tremendously. You don't have to go through a conditional use permit to get an accessory dwelling.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, the administration of the ordinance gets easier.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have enough complexity as it is. But if we can simplify something, I at least think that's not a bad idea.
Yep.
Okay. So on the duplexes, any thoughts?
I would fully endorse that. You know, I think I recall that Oregon has passed a state law that says duplexes are used by right in all residential zones. If they, you know, I mean, that's the trend of where people are going. In my mind, the critical thing in this town tends to be septic capacity, which the state regulates by the number of bedrooms. So if somebody has the same number of bedrooms, it calls it a two-bedroom and a one-bedroom duplex or a three-bedroom house. From a septic standpoint, from a traffic standpoint, from a noise standpoint, it's all the same.
It is all the same. And if I have a big family, Boulder is not, you know, the classical Utah as much anymore as it used to be. Maybe Utah is, in general, is not as classic as it used to be. But you know what? When I lived in Cache Valley, there were a lot of 8 and 10-bedroom houses.
Okay.
They have much bigger, if some of those kids are teenagers, the traffic impact, the septic impact, everything that happens from a family like that is bigger than most duplexes would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is something that is easy to do. We just change the table of uses and go. It simplifies administration of the ordinance because you don't really have to mess with accessory dwelling units anymore, which are complicated. The state law and the Boulder ordinance requirements, both on accessory dwelling units, are somewhat complicated. This just makes it easier to administer the ordinance.
So I have one question for Lee. And so I still am not quite following the logic on how a duplex is like the same thing as an external ADU.
Well, it's not the same thing.
Internal.
But it means that there's two dwelling units on the lot. And so why would you, as the landowner, go through the pain of getting a permit for an external accessory dwelling unit when you could just have a duplex as a matter of right?
And to clarify, that would only be for new construction. Like, you can't add on to your home and call it a duplex?
You can, because the state law allows you to have an internal accessory dwelling unit in an existing home.
Yeah.
So, you know, the town doesn't actually have any choice about that particular version of it. Is you have to allow those internal accessory dwelling units. That's the way state law works.
Yeah.
So, you know, there isn't, it is just a simpler way of accomplishing the same thing. The only difference really is that both units could be rented, and your current accessory dwelling unit says that the owner, one unit would be owner and one would be a renter. But is the town of Boulder actually going to send April out knocking on the door to say, are you renting or do you own? And then if you're both renting, we're going to toss them? I don't think Boulder's going to do that. I don't think Boulder should do that, for one thing, but I also don't think you are going to do that anyway. So if you're not going to do that, then why not just let people have duplexes?
Lee, do you mind taking a question from the audience?
I can take a question from the audience.
Jennifer?
Yes. No, you have to come to a microphone. State your name.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Bach, and I'm just asking about the duplexes. Would that be strictly a single owner with a renter, or would it be two owners? Because I'm from...
You could have two owners. And how you could have an owner and a renter. You could have two rooms.
How do duplexes affect lot divisions and...
There's
is a, it a different set of rules? I'm just curious.
Legally, that duplex that is two ownership units is a condominium, and it falls under the state law for condominiums, which have a whole separate set of platting requirements, of requirements about party wall agreements, all the things that have to happen when you have owners of adjacent units, right? There's some paperwork, and there is a state law that dictates how that paperwork should go. So you could build a unit here in Boulder, offer both pieces for sale, and you would just have to follow the state rules for condominiums, which means you'd have to find an attorney to help you get through the paperwork.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's bothersome, but it's not hard.
Okay. Well, I just want to state, I know there'll be more discussion on this in particular, and I know that we can go on to average density, but for this one in particular, there's a lot that I'm wary about that if I don't understand, I know there's other people that don't understand out there, or I should hope so. But the whole idea of duplexes puts me straight into all the images of what I've seen all over the Mountain West, which is resort towns. And that is not something I personally want Boulder to be. So I'm just saying that. I don't know if any other commissioners feel that way but.
That's why this is on the list, is to talk about it, right? And what I'm saying is that it has some advantages that are administrative, right? Makes life simpler. But if that's not the housing form that you want, it can be separated out from the rest of this menu.
Yeah, no, I hear the administrative simplicity, and even for the public, but I question the character of Boulder's demise from something like that.
Matt, I'm going to ask a question. How does having two families living in a house affect the character of Boulder when we already allow residential short-term rentals, which much more makes it the type of resort town you're fearing? So...
John, I don't want to get into debate right now because I want to go through this list, but let's bookmark this for a discussion in the future.
I have a comment. This is Colleen. So if you, with that in mind, talking about having two people own on one piece of property, I mean, that right there is helping somebody out because they don't have to pay so much. I mean, it's another...
You're splitting the land cost.
You're splitting, yeah, so...
To make it really simple, you're splitting the land cost.
So, yeah. Units, right? Yeah, so yeah. I just want that to be made known, too, as far as what that does to help people in their pocketbook.
Yeah, no, there are a number of questions that have to be aired out here, including the character question that Matt raised, quite legitimately, and... The thing here is that we're going to go through the whole menu and then we'll talk about what you're ordering, right? Just like the restaurant, only a little more complicated. So can we move on from duplexes for the time being?
Yeah. Yes, I'd like to see what's on the rest of the menu, please.
Is a townhouse
considered the same as a duplex?
Yeah, attached, there's all sorts of ways.
The common law.
You know, all sorts of ways to define attached units.
Okay.
And you can find different ordinances in different communities and different real estate companies. And there's a million definitions, but all that really matters is there's an attached wall, common wall.
Common wall.
Right. So we can call it anything we want to in the definitions. It's duplex is what people understand quickest. So, okay. Now let's go on to the next one, which is fun. And you have drawings. Okay, can you get the drawings visible? on the screen, please. Thank you. A lot of communities have discovered that minimum lot sizes as a way of managing the density of development have some significant disadvantages because they limit the flexibility of a landowner to do what makes sense for that person's specific piece of property. And so I drew you up an example here that could happen in Boulder. This is, in theory, 10 acres, a nice rectangular piece, of which about 7 happens to be irrigated. And there's an existing house on it, which is the house to the north, which is to say the top of the drawing. And you can see the irrigated parcel there in green. Right now, if I want to, say, pay off my mortgage on the house that's there, by selling a lot, there's only one way I can do it. I, as a landowner, have no flexibility. I can split that lot dead down the center. That's it. That's all. 2 5-acre lots. But does that make any sense at all for this case? Why would you split the irrigated pasture, which needs to be managed as a single pasture, given its size? Why split that? Why not put, you've got an acre and a half down here at the bottom that has soils that are suitable in this example for septic, that's up a little slope, and there are places all over Boulder that look exactly like this. Why wouldn't you put a house down there? And why wouldn't you draw the lot line at the bottom into the irrigated? And you'd have an acre and a half lot and an 8.5-acre lot. The density is the same. The traffic impacts are the same. The number of structures on the ground are the same. But you've allowed that landowner the ability to do something that only, as near as I can tell, makes sense. Whereas right now, you're basically saying to that landowner, do something that doesn't actually make very much sense. Questions?
So you're saying that by providing a density average, you can really conform a lot to the terrain that actually exists.
Absolutely. And to the use that exists, right? To irrigation or to where the existing home is or to where you can take advantage of views. There's all sorts of things that are goals a landowner might have that don't have any negative impact on the town. Why not give them the flexibility to do it? You're not changing the overall number of, at this step in the menu, we're not changing the overall amount of development that's allowed. We're just letting people shift it around in a way that makes sense.
Okay. Don't we have that power now, as the town council does?
Council does not have that.
They can approve.
No. No.
I know they're under certain ordinances.
The ordinance requires a minimum of 5 acres in the GMU and LDR zoning districts, and that's it. That's all. The council can't change that. So the only way you can subdivide, the example that I've given you here as of today, is to do something that doesn't make any sense at all from the landowner's point of view.
So this could happen before or after building.
That's right.
Meaning there could be a building on the smaller section and you could divide, or you can
do it either way, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's the simplest math in the world. We're doing an average. And so if your average has to be 5, well, you can do 2 and 10, right? And I mean, if you allowed duplexes, then that would change how you view this in terms of the density, but it doesn't change the idea that the landowner needs flexibility to use their land the best way possible.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm trying to get at here is, it's one thing to have building restrictions. It's incredibly important to have restrictions, but there's no reason to have restrictions that have people doing things that don't make sense.
So
okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate again. If you split this land and it will be slightly off of 5 acres, it can be, then if somebody wants to come in here and do irrigation land, right?
Right.
If they want a project or anything put on that land, you have to have at least 5 to 6 acres is what NRCS and other projects have. So you're limiting down what people come in and what the lands, this area is known for.
The current ordinance limits that. The current ordinance doesn't allow people you don't have enough left over to qualify for any of the aid that you might get if you split it in two.
Yeah.
So again, you're just
thinking, to have the freedom of that would be a whole, all different lands are not all the same. So.
No, they aren't. And that's really, if you boil it way down, that's the point, is that the situations are not the same.
Huh.
So why not have some flexibility for people to respond to what they have in their particular situation? It doesn't change the impact on the town a bit. Same number of structures, same amount of traffic, same number of septic systems or wells, or the same amount of water demanded from the water system. Doesn't change any of those things.
Yeah. The only potential negative I see, and I don't know if it's, well, the only potential negative I see is just that we're seeing a problem of people trying to do agriculture in town having a hard time affording land. So it creates a situation where they can afford perhaps the lot with no irrigated land, but then the lot with irrigated land sells for more, perhaps to someone who has no intention of irrigating the land, and then you lose it. I'm not saying that will necessarily happen, but it does potentially make farmland less accessible, which might make it less likely to continue to exist.
Well, it depends on how people decide to do it, because we're not dictating anything here, remember?
We can't decide how they use it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're simply saying you have this option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the example that I came up with, obviously, I came up with an example that shows the option off to make sense. There may be places where it doesn't make sense. That's fine. But why not liberate people to be a little bit creative about how they use this property.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a reason not to do it. That's just the only unintended consequence.
I think we have a question out in the audience again.
Sorry. This is Jennifer Bach again, and I'm just curious, with the current ordinances, couldn't you divide the lot into 2 5-acres and then cluster the two and a half acres and the other 5-acre part?
The cluster ordinance, to the extent that it's actually clear, would allow you to do that. But it gives you a minimum of 2.5 acres. So again, you'd be splitting the irrigated here. You'd have to split the irrigated to do that. And you don't change, the way it's written right now is just another iteration of making things inflexible. And there's no need to do that. Unless somebody can identify something that's really wrong with this scenario, there's no need to not let landowners have that much flexibility.
Yeah.
Mark Nelson. So I just to clarify, so in this scenario, are you talking about them having an agreement to keep that in agriculture? Because if without that, the proposal is ridiculous.
That's a good question. Yeah. Okay. And we're going to get there as we go through the steps in this menu. Okay. Okay. Does everybody fairly clear on this and ready to move on for the time being?
Yeah.
Okay. So average density can be a really, really good tool. Now, the next thing is to set density loose through the transfer of development rights. So if I am one of the larger landowners, particularly, who has some substantial, either irrigated or scenic or in some other way, critical land, and I own another parcel somewhere else in Boulder that doesn't have those characters, could I move the number of dwelling units that I'm permitted over to that other parcel? Why not? Same number of dwelling units, same impacts. Second iteration of that is, let's say that I don't have another parcel, but my buddy does. And we work out a contract between us that says that I will allow that person to use the density that's assigned to my land on theirs. And we get the development where it belongs.
For some reason, I don't understand this option.
Okay. Okay, so it's pretty simple.
Okay.
Let's try to start really basic. Right now, and then let's use round numbers. I have 40 acres. How many dwellings can I build? I have 40 acres in GMU. I can build 8. 40 divided by 5. I have two 40-acre parcels, one of which is irrigated and productive. I could put 8 units on there and cut it up into 8 5-acre parcels, right? The way things work right now. I have another that's dry land. It's all pinyon, juniper, shrubs. I could put 8 on there, right? Same deal. Would it be better from the point of view of the character of town to put all 16 units up in the PJ and to leave the irrigated open? Now, I can't answer that question for all of you. You're the people who live here and figure out what the character of Boulder means to you. But what I can tell you is that if protecting certain lands means something to you, this is one way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of paperwork, okay, because we're doing something that's a little unusual and complicated, although there are communities all over the country who allow this. You have 2 steps. You could allow it only where I am moving from one parcel that I own to another parcel I own. That's step 1. You could just stop there. Step 2 is to say, no, John and I make a deal. And we move it all to his property off mine. That's the second step. More paperwork. A lot more paperwork, actually. But still, not paperwork that is unusual or that can't be done. And so it's taking the average density thing a step further and saying that we're averaging over the whole community to some degree, right? We're going to get a certain amount of development one way or the other. Let's get it in the best possible places by allowing people to move things around. So is that more clear?
Yeah.
That more clear? I have a question for you. Lee, is what communities are doing this effectively that you can give us a name for to look at?
The transfer development rights is permitted by state law in Maryland. Everybody there does it. Hmm. It's used extensively to protect agricultural lands there. It's probably a place where you can go to see it. There's communities all over California that do it for various reasons. In California, it's often used because there's communities that have steep slopes, wildfire hazards, big natural constraints, and this would allow an owner to transfer out of those areas where you got the hazards to a place where the hazards don't exist. You can find it in different places in Colorado. There's examples everywhere. There are communities, a lot of smaller places only permit you to transfer it to another parcel you own. In order to keep things simple, that's pretty common because you do get into a lot more legal complexity when you make a transfer between owners. I mean, in the end, it's just a big contract, right? But it's a complicated contract. And the town might not want to have to mess with reviewing that. But people do this pretty constantly these days. You know, when I was learning this stuff back in the 70s, this was all a shiny new idea, but 70 is a long time ago. And
great.
It's back to the idea of it's in the community's interest to let the landowners have the flexibility to use their land in the way that makes the most sense. Right? That's what we're saying here is we want the landowners to be able to accomplish their goals while helping the community accomplish its goals. And sometimes, and you could, you know, you have an overlay zoning district right now in Boulder's ordinances. That's the Mesa Top C. I forget the exact name of it. And that's intended to constrain development that affects view sheds, really. That's the purpose of it, the way it's written. We could say there's a view corridor here, and I own property in the view corridor. If I put houses there, they're going to be skylined. I woke up this morning looking out the window at a skyline house down in Escalon, and it was like, wow, that thing dominates the whole view. If you don't want that to happen, you could give them the option of transferring development off of the skyline, off of the ridgeline, somewhere where it doesn't have the same impact.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
It's just a way of being flexible in everybody's interest, the landowner and the community. It's complicated as you take it further and further here, but it is an option that Boulder could use to accomplish some pretty cool stuff, given the way this landscape works.
Can I give you an example to make sure I'm understanding this correctly? So basically this means that one person with 10 acres has two development rights.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything that would stop someone from going to a bunch of people with 10 acre lots and one house on them and buying up their property rights and overdeveloping another section, which I think a lot of people would probably take that money because it's not their own land being developed, it's across town. And then could theoretically someone do that?
Well, there still have to be rules about protecting views, protecting stream buffers. I mean, there's still a whole lot of rules that this has to meet, even in the current ordinance, much less in what we might come up with. So they still have to comply with all those rules.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to have some type of a minimum lot size, half an acre or an acre, so that you can't overdevelop, if that's the right word, develop more than so much. So there's going to be boundaries on it. The main boundary on it, really, though, is the you got to be able to exercise your imagination. You got to be willing to spend some money up front to figure it out.
Yeah.
Not very many people are going to do this. That's the history we see, at least. But for those people who have a property that is suitable to transfer from and to, particularly if it's the same landowner going from one parcel they own to another.
Yeah.
It makes a ton of sense to get the development in the best possible place. Think about access. We always are talking about access, right? And you guys are going to get into access big time after I'm done here. If you can get development clustered a little more where it's got better access, makes it easier for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there are parcels in Boulder, like on Lower Boulder Road. There's plenty of people who have land down there who don't really have adequate access, right, for any significant level of development down there. And so, hey, if I'm on Lower Boulder Road and I have a piece of property further up into the community that's more accessible, why not solve a big problem by letting me move the development up to where it's accessible? Hmm? Same amount of development, only it's in a much better place. Questions?
Yeah. I can see a lot of merit. It's not just access. We've spent a lot of time talking about fire hydrants, the horrendous cost of running hydrants, which comes out to about a couple hundred dollars a foot for an 8-inch line, buried line. So that could be tens of thousands of dollars to reach a lot that's at some distance from the road.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think the big one is to keep the character of Boulder. We need to keep the irrigated fields. We also need to keep the pastures that are wildlife corridors and view sheds. So right now, our ordinance makes it hard for an owner who's got the best intent to do the best thing for the community. And this just gives one more piece of flexibility. And yet I don't see a threat because, as you say, it's not increasing the overall demand on the town.
Okay, so now let's talk about increasing the overall demand.
Yeah.
Because that's the next step.
Yeah.
Even if we were to adopt these things, snap the fingers, and you could average density and you could move it around, are you going to get more affordable housing just because you do that? Not really. Maybe more affordable on some relative scale. The only way you're going to get more affordable housing is to say that the person who's willing to provide it gets some type of incentive.
Mm-hmm.
The town of Boulder is not going to write people checks, even if that were legal. The only thing that the town of Boulder can do is to say, we're going to give you a higher density of building rights if you give us what we need, which is attainable housing. Also, for protecting the irrigated lands or other natural assets, you can only ask the landowner to do so much, right? They have a certain responsibility to the community to perform in a certain way, but you can't say no, don't. If you own 80 acres of land that is scenic and irrigated and all those things, are you going to say to them, no, you're stuck with cows? There are communities that do that. I don't think that's going to happen in Boulder. I'm not sure it should happen in Boulder. But regardless, if you want to have protection of those open space assets, or you want to get attainable housing, or both, because they can be connected, then you're going to have to let people make more money. That's the bottom line, the way it works, right? And you make more money by having more units to sell. And so now we're going to talk about providing effective incentives for affordable housing and or open space. And there are so many variations of how that could be done that we could all go crazy talking about all the variations. So I just gave you a nice, simple, straightforward set of thoughts here about how this could look in Boulder. I think it's in the ballpark of what could work in Boulder given land values here. The existing subdivision cluster language lets you double the density to 2.5, and it's not enough to get units affordable. It's not going to work. It's also rather unclear and constricted as to how you do that. But what I'm saying is, okay, let's say that if you're willing to give us, and don't get hung up on the numbers too much here, okay? I know it's hard not to, but don't get hung up on the numbers. One out of three lots is perpetually affordable that you create. We'll give you some additional lots. If you give us, and I put 100% in here, which is pushing it to the edge, you give us 100% of your critical open space, you get some extra lots, right? And because it's flexible, all of a sudden, they don't have to be 5-acre lots. They don't have to all be in the same place. You can effectively put them in the landscape where they belong. You could even, depending on how you go through this venue, you could put them on somebody else's parcel with a contract with them, and you all share in the proceeds. So what we have here is something that may sound complicated. Communities all over the country do it all the time. It's not hard. You just have to get set up to do it. You have to pick numbers that really are incentives. That's why we proposed having a housing providers working group as part of the public engagement here. And, you know, if you look at the rest of this list, how do you get additional density? The way I wrote it up here, just so we had a place to start, is you protect 100% of significant open space resources, or you provide 1/3 of the lots you create perpetually affordable. And those numbers might need to change. It might be that you have to do more than that to make things affordable. Land values in Boulder are awfully high. So you have to figure out how that density bonus that goes to the owner works. You're allowing them to transfer development rights. You give them incentive to transfer off of irrigated or other significant resources. You give them an incentive to transfer into perpetually affordable lots. And at that point, you can hook them up with housing programs that we're going to talk about in the forum tomorrow night, right? That's a possibility. Many people who have those types of resources can get some tax benefits out of doing deals like this. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people have the potential to get a tax benefit out of doing this type of deal that you're setting them up for. And you end up with at least potential, not the guarantee, but the potential that a person who would be an EMT or a firefighter, you know, you don't want your town to be populated by old farts like me. I can't carry the hose up and down the stairs anymore, guys. You know, I can't do it. And you need people who can carry the hose up and down the stairs. That's life. It's community life. And this is really the way, short of some philanthropist doing something miraculous. This is the way that Boulder could say
it's our policy, and it is your policy, it's written in the general plan, to provide attainable housing for people who play important roles in our community. And while we're at it, we also have a great mechanism for protecting the agriculture. I mean, the reason that I keep coming back to Boulder, and I've been coming to Boulder for longer than some people in this room have been around, it's the oasis effect. Without the irrigation, it's just more sandstone. You know, I don't know how else to say it. And you can do what you need to do to sustain a viable community that has the services and types of people you need who can afford, hopefully, to get into the housing that they would want. I mean, the college that I worked at until August is in a similar remote place in the Adirondacks. The whole time that I worked there, which was 3 years, essentially, our facilities guys were trying to hire two HVAC technicians. They were willing to pay $60,000 a year, which is pretty darn good. You could make more than that as an HVAC technician in the big city, but not out in the countryside. They never filled those jobs because nobody who is an HVAC technician could find a place to live there that they could afford. It is that straightforward and simple. They couldn't fill the jobs. And so, you know, Chris, my friend, he's left probably because of this type of stress. You know, he was running around trying to fix the heating and air conditioning with what he knew because he couldn't hire technicians. And it's just a reality in rural America, particularly in the most beautiful and attractive parts of rural America, that the people who do the work commute. I mean, I did a lot of work in Sun Valley at one time in my life, and I would stop on my way into the valley. I would stop at a coffee shop in Haley, in Bellevue, which is the smallest town farthest from the ski hill in the valley. And I would just watch truck after truck, the glass guy, the plumber, every one of those tradesmen driving all the way from Twin Falls, which was 85 miles, to work. And they'd been up, I mean, if they were in Bellevue before 8, they'd been up since 5 to get ready to come to work. And then they went back in the evening and their families lost that much time with them. And you don't have to do it that way. You don't.
Yeah.
But you have to have the political, social willpower to change it.
So thanks, Lee. I want to just note that we have about 6 minutes until I want to switch to the public hearing. So now it may be the time for last questions around incentives and this.
We've gone through the list pretty much. I think people are fairly clear on what I have proposed. And it would be helpful to me to have some sense. I mean, for one thing, you guys can always email me questions. That's not hard to do. But before the next regular meeting, it would be really nice to have some sense as to whether all of this is worth pursuing or whether it's dead on arrival. Because honestly, I can go hiking and have a beer rather than working on housing options for Boulder if you guys are not going to pull the trigger.
Reasonable.
Speaking personally, if I was to pick from the menu, I would want further consideration on, density average. Nump would be the first thing, would be top of the menu. Mm-hmm. Incentives, yes. And density transfer, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Duplexes, right now, I'm not so interested.
Anybody else have a similar list or a different list?
That feels similar to my list. Hmm? That feels similar to my list.
Duplexes not turning people on too much?
I think it's definitely
neutral
to look at. Mm-hmm. And I think that you would have to change the wording. I think it's like a lot of other things, it's the word that just like accessible housing opposed to What was the other
attainable one? Versus affordable?
Right.
Exactly. Not affordable.
Yeah.
And yeah. As far as that goes, and how you, because it is, it's the same. It's just verbiage, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Really?
Words
just
make a difference. Verbiage.
Yeah.
Words make a difference. Yeah. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm Jennifer Yearlings, and I want to thank you for putting these forward. I think the idea that we wouldn't consider all of these is crazy, at least think about them and talk about them. As a person who grew up in a duplex, I think it's really, really unfortunate. I mean, Matt, I can appreciate, but I don't think we're talking about row houses here. We're talking about a duplex, and we're talking about a duplex that could look, doesn't even, can be masked, doesn't even have to look like a duplex. I mean, so some of the finest, you know, craftsmen, I mean, like a duplex, like really, we need to actually, you know, character. I have plenty of duplexes that have way more character than many single houses here. So I really hate to see you get caught up in the concept of, you know, character. Like, how are you going to define that? And what, like, I don't know. So I took a little personal umbrage at that, but I just think that we're being too narrow in that. And again, we're not talking about row houses. We're not talking about a resort. I think we need to be creative. And the other thing is that for these, that if we don't do these, we don't get any of the objectives that we're talking about. So if we keep it at the 5 acres, we don't get any of the things. We're not going to have the character. We're not going to have the people. We're not going to have the housing. We can't keep it as is and get any of the things that we want. So anyway, I like the idea that we're flexible, and that we, all of these things take an enormous amount of work, of paperwork, time. But as a community, I don't want to be, I want to have young people, I want us to really think about how we can do it. And I hate to see anybody take anything off the table at this point. We're talking day one. Okay. Thank you for all your help and work.
Thanks, Jennifer. And we have a couple of minutes left. I'd like to hear from the rest of the commission.
Mark's going to come up quick.
We had another hand up. We may as well do this. Okay. Mark Nelson again. So one of the things we haven't talked about is that when this whole housing issue started, we talked about focusing on the need, right, and targeting the need. Now, one of the problems I see with one of the things you suggest here is that, you know, we overbuild the need, and that becomes kind of a revolving door of need and economic requirements. And I see this over and over again. We've all seen this. We know this is true. We want to avoid that. We don't have that revolving door like they have in places like Moab or these other places where they have this problem. We want to target the need and focus on that and not get into a situation where we're like overbuilding and then, oh, well, we have affordable housing. Please come to Boulder. Because I don't think that the audience is to fill place up with people. That is not an option. And so that, and maybe that we may get it somewhere.
Well, you know, I'd like to respond to that because I think it's really important. And it affected a proposed development here a year or so ago, a couple of years ago. And the reason that development fell really flat was that people had big questions about, can you keep it perpetually affordable? Can you actually meet your goal? If people can flip a house and it gets into the revolving door that you're talking about, then do we need to do this? Probably not.
I was here. I was involved.
Right.
This is, you were wrong about this.
Yeah.
It did not fail because of this reason. It failed because it was built as a portable house.
And they couldn't.
And it was not a price.
That's right.
The numbers did not add up.
Right.
Yep.
That's the primary reason why.
And that's what I'm saying.
Not because you hold the void network.
No.
No.
I agree. Everything I heard was it was because you couldn't make them hold the price.
Oh.
Right. And but we can make them hold the price. It's done all the time.
Well.
And so I'm not proposing anything here.
I agree with Jennifer. I agree with Jennifer. We need to keep all these on the table.
Yep.
And I just want to get this off the
you know, the idea of doing away with 5-acre lots and clustering. I would like to see us keep those, right, and use this as an alternative to see how it works.
Well, I pretty much agree with that.
Okay.
I pretty much agree. Nothing that I have proposed here and nothing that I foresee proposing is actually going to say you couldn't build a 5-acre lot, right? We're going to leave that more or less the way it is, which is unclear, vague, and difficult, but we're going to leave that more or less the way it is and provide an alternative. That's the way I see this.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that's, I think that, like Jennifer said, we need to keep kind of this on the table, which is not okay. I think this is what you're suggesting has some merits, but it's so complicated.
I have been totally honest about how complicated this
very
is.
Very complicated. You know, we will all want to go like you have a beer.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Any last words from the commission?
I think that's an excellent presentation, Lee. I think we need to. It'll be interesting to carry this into the public meeting tomorrow night. I think Mark is right that we need to quantify the needs, but just from things I've heard from people, I think we're losing in the greater Boulder area, which includes the draw, we're likely to lose 3 or 4 rentals within the next year for things that owners are already doing or planning to do. So, and yet we've probably got at least 6 people right now looking for a house. So, you know, 10 affordable housing units would not be overbuilding in Boulder. It probably wouldn't even come close to meeting the immediate needs of people who are looking for better housing, more affordable housing. And yet we're losing units because people are selling, tearing them down to rebuild a new house on the property and so forth.
Well, some of this could come online immediately. If you do density averaging, owners could create a small lot immediately. Now, they could sell that small lot for a non-affordable price, right, in Boulder. 1.5 acres in Boulder is not affordable to most working people. They could make, but it's been pointed out to me by many people that there are bargain sales going on between people who know each other. And it would facilitate those bargain sales tremendously to have the density averaging, because then I wouldn't have to cut my 10.5 with a straight line that makes possibly no sense at all. And so some of this could come online pretty quickly and it would have a very small impact, but it would have an impact. It gets, you know, and the words that Mark had about how complicated this is absolutely true. It's the only way you can do it, is with this level of complexity. We got to fight our way through that. So I guess I'm going to assume that we're not going to go through this list tomorrow night. We're going to have the program we have with Charlene and Dave and set people up to understand that there's some help to people for housing. And with that, I will go have a beer while you guys talk about access.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. And I will see you tomorrow night.
See you then.
And if anybody wants to have a talk about any of this one-to-one, I'm around all day tomorrow. And so if anybody wants to give me a buzz, I would be happy to sit down with you.
Thanks, Lee.
All right.
Thank you. Matt, can we pause for 2 minutes? Do you mind if I run to the bathroom?
Okay, let's pause, till 7:08.
We resist.
Okay, we're back online, at least with the recording. So a couple things before we go into the public hearing here. For clarifications purposes, I called the special meeting because not only was Lee Nellis in town, but we had some town errors a little ways back. The applicants for the Meadowlark subdivision had all their paperwork in, and we renegotiated that last meeting, so it won't happen again. But for those two reasons, I called the special meeting in order to make this happen. So I appreciate the commissioner's extra work, because it has been extra work, and your time. As far as, because we're in a small community, and before we go into this, I want to say that as I'm an adjacent owner to the subdivision that we're talking about, and I want to say that I have no conflict of interest that's going to affect my decision-making. So I'll be in on the discussion and the decisions tonight. On the other hand, one of the applicants of the Meadowlark subdivision, Elena Hughes, is going to recuse herself and be in the and act as a public person in the audience and as the applicant from there. And for alternate Shelley Price, you'll be sitting in on the discussion and the vote for that. Is that all clear?
Yes. Should I do that now?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is Elena Hughes. I'm recusing myself and going to the audience.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a formal procedure behind that, Peg, or if that's enough right there.
That's good. Can you hear me now, Matt?
Yeah, you're still a little low, but I can hear you. Okay, so
Ed, I would like to really quick make a disclosure. This is John Verant, that I've had very extensive outside discussions with Elena, both as commission member and as applicant. I've exchanged emails with the zoning administrator and so forth on this issue. This was all in attempts to get facts and information organized for this meeting, and no decisions were made during those conversations, and any material results of those conversations will be brought up in this meeting. So that's the disclosure of ex parte communications.
Okay, thank you, John. So before we go into the public of the public hearing part, I wonder if April, zoning administrator, you can sort of give us the context and overview and sort of you've seen all the paperwork, of course, and just give a quick cliff notes of the staff report on what's going on here for both us and the public.
Yeah, I'm going to go through my first staff report. That was the original staff report from November 1st. It's a minor subdivision that will create one additional lot on an existing 3-lot subdivision. They are utilizing a well and have been approved to dig. The one question is, since the PC has approved minor subdivisions can be accessed by private driveway, question is in regard to fire and safety requirements that need to be met up to road standards. The PC will need to discuss what the requirements are for driveways. Do they need to meet the fire? Do they need to meet road standards? That's kind of because the fire is requiring 20 feet and then access to the new additional lot that's being subdivided. And then the applicants are aware that the driveway maintenance agreement should be done with other property owners. Now, recently, this last week, we have found that there have been some issues. There was an update on the plat, and there has been confusion on the road that the driveways are accessing, if it is actually Lower Boulder or Robinson Lane. I have two parcels that have the addresses of Robinson Lane, but the plat was just apparently amended on Monday to say Lower Boulder. And so there needs to be an investigation on what it actually is. If it's Robinson Lane, is that a road or is that a driveway? And I would say procedurally, since this was, the changes were done, all changes need to be sent to the zoning administrator so I can review it. And that wasn't quite done, so I didn't have that verification, and it was sent on Monday, which is 2 days before the meeting. So I'm not sure if we have enough time to review everything with this road issue. We need to investigate that, the road coming up. And I think that's what I have for you guys to discuss.
Can I make a comment about the minor subdivision? We don't have a minor subdivision, do we?
No, I'm sorry. So it was...
Well, I want to make sure that that word doesn't get stuck in there because we are not approving a minor subdivision. Yeah.
So the Planning Commission has agreed if it's four or less lots, the access can be done by a driveway.
Yes.
A subdivision can be done.
Yeah.
So.
And that's something that we've just done recently.
Correct.
And is it in it? Okay.
Yeah, that was, I believe, approved in June. The final improvement, I think, was in June. And so I think when we approved that, the clarification of driveway, we didn't think about fire access and how that would pertain to that.
Okay, I could speak on that. Okay, for everyone's information, that was Ordinance 22-1, which has not been included in the codified ordinances. So if you look at the codified ordinances for subdivisions, you will see the old wording. The Ordinance 22-1 is on the website at the top of the American Legal page under Ordinances Pending Codification. So that ordinance was passed by the Town Council. But as I say, if you pull up the codified version of the subdivision ordinance, you will still see the previous wording. To clarify an important point here, in Ordinance 22-1, it explicitly says that the driveways do have to meet the Wildland Urban Interface Code. What that ordinance exempts, and the only thing that ordinance, what exempts two things. It changed that the area of the driveway was not subtracted from the lot to determine minimum lot size. And it explicitly exempted the driveways from the table of road standards, which is, I think, 152.041H4 is the table of road standards. So that was exempted, but it does say that the driveway has to meet the Urban Wildland Interface Code. And that basically says that the town fire authority needs to inspect and sign off on whatever is done on the ground.
Correct. And the fire has, it's in the application that has recommendations.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. So I want to make a motion to, I guess, close the special meeting and go into public hearing.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Kelly Price Gibson, aye.
John Brath, aye.
All right, so for the public, first, of course, I want to give a chance for the applicants to speak. And after that is the case, then the public can come up and give their comments. Of course, let's keep comments to, in a timely manner towards the subject at hand. I'll just say that. Thank you. So either to Elena or Dylan or however, and actually some clarification on Lower Boulder Road would be great too, if you have some.
We do. Elena, I know that you're there in person, and I'm sure have discussed this with a number of folks there in the room. So it being labeled Robeson on our map was an accident on behalf of Torgerson. He saw it somewhere. It wasn't official. We have the plat that was filed with the county for 25 years, the plat that we bought the land with that specifically says Lower Boulder. We have provided that to you all, and we're happy to do so again. So that is what we have based this on. We also have, trying to understand really what you guys would need from us on that. The plat clearly says it. That was filed with the county up until we bought the land. So to us, that feels pretty final. I know that Lower Boulder Road is a mess in and of itself, but for us, we feel pretty clear that this is established and was filed with the county for a number of years. So we feel that that being Lower Boulder is settled in our mind.
Excuse me, Peg, could you please bring that map back up so we can see it?
And here, I can also share my screen and pull up the original Goldman subdivision plat that was filed with the county for quite a long time. And that shows the Lower Boulder Road as well. If you don't have that handy, Peg, I can do that as well.
Yes, could you go ahead and do that?
Okay. So if you see here, trying to zoom out to show you guys, this is that original Goldman subdivision plat, was with the county for quite a long time up until we did the boundary line adjustment. But this is the official plat for that entire larger subdivision. And as you can clearly see, it's Lower Boulder Road there.
Okay, so I want to make a comment on that. Peg,
we're going to stay in public hearing at the moment.
Sorry.
Okay.
You can't either.
No, I'm good. I'm just going to thank you for showing us that plat, the Goldman plat. That is very helpful. So could you continue your statement?
Dylan, or for you, do you guys have any other comments?
Well, okay, this would be, there's been some discussion about some of these other issues. If you want to come back at the end and respond to those, that might be better. I don't know if we have anything from Elizabeth Julian tonight. I was wondering, I guess she's not planning to speak tonight.
Right now, let's just keep focusing on the public hearing. When we go into discussion, we can ask questions of the audience and applicants and so on. But yeah, we're waiting for statements and comments. Are there any more?
This is Elaine. I was just going to comment on the driveway agreement. We've spoken to Troy and Elizabeth, and we're working on a driveway agreement with them. Elizabeth is going to be on tonight, but something must have come up.
Okay. Are there any other public comments in the room?
Donna
Owens. Okay. I guess we acknowledge Donna Owens. She's got her hand up.
Hi. Yeah. I thought we were waiting for Dylan and Elena to finish. If this is time for us all to talk right now. A lot has just come to mind right in the last 5 minutes, so I'm totally changed what my thoughts were going to be. I do want to first say, duplexes, I wanted to make a comment on the last meeting, but there was really no time.
We're not talking about duplexes right now, so you'll need to keep it.
I was not allowed at the last meeting, so fine. I just want to say duplexes are great. And I think that I want to state that I am in agreement that this is a great subdivision. I'm happy for both the parties involved. I don't have any problem with them having this land. We are adjacent landowners. Other than, I do want every procedure to be fair, and I want it to all be in the right. And I'm starting to wonder if there's a question about the road, why that they're still having a talk right now. I absolutely had questions about access because I noticed that the original map had a driveway that isn't, and access has been changed. And now they've explained that because of the new ordinance, they can have this driveway. So that kind of helped me. But I have another question just came up and I'm sort of like, oh my God, well, a little unprepared. I'm really sorry. Oh, and the well on the plat map just said proposed well, but it was just stated that they actually have a well. And I did want to know the procedure on that. Do they have to prove that they have the well right with the state, or can they just draw a circle that says proposed on the plat? And I don't know what that is. Or does the planning commission then say, well, you can't have a final until you actually have a well? I'm just curious about what the rules are on all of that.
We are required to show that we have permission to drill a well, which we do, and we have that approval from the state. So we also have a water right, and all of that is official and was submitted. Thanks, Donna.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure what all of that was.
It hasn't been dug yet, but we have approval and we're on the list. They are about a year out, but we're on the list.
And do you, whoever needs to answer this, the fire department has already okayed all of your fire, right?
Yeah, so Peter sent us back his recommendations, and the preliminary plat can be approved with those recommendations, and we just have to implement them by the time the final, but they're in the packet.
Okay, you're being allowed a preliminary to pass without that being signed. I just want to make that public record, yes?
So we have the, and anyone on Planning Commission can pop in here too, but we have the recommendations from Peter. And final approval won't be given until we implement those recommendations.
Gotcha. Okay. And then my next issue that just came up a few minutes ago is that you're still negotiating with Elizabeth. Do you have a signed agreement already in place with all of your neighbors that have access on that road that this is okay?
So when we did the boundary adjustment plat, and we changed the road, we all signed that plat. So that kind of agrees to us all agreeing to the access. A driveway agreement, like a maintenance agreement, we are in the process of making that ordinance that we have, 22-1. The way I read that, at least, it is not required to have road maintenance agreements for driveways. It is required to have them for streets. And subdivisions of four or fewer lots may have streets or driveways rather than streets. So that's the way we've read that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So no, we are working on,
I appreciate it.
It's important to do it, but it wasn't required of us for this stage.
Okay. That is really great answer, because I know that was required of ours before we could have a preliminary. And I wanted to make sure that if it was required of you, that you would have to postpone this hearing. But if it is not required, and the planners know that, and that the zoning administrator did not need to, then I'm good. So thank you very much. Oh, other than I want to finish the comment on the Robeson Road. I was told today by someone that the Robeson Road is on a county plat, and I will have to go back through ours. So there might be some contests there as to, did Goldman get it wrong? So just to say, I'm not real attached to the Robeson name, but I would like to have clarification on that. Thank you.
Other comments in the room? Tessa Barkin wants to come up.
This is Tessa Barkin. I just want to say that Elena and Dylan have been doing their due diligence on this for a year and a half now. One of the earliest things that came up that was like a blockage for their application was an issue with roads. And so it seems like if the town had been doing their due diligence, this other issue about roads could have come up a lot sooner. And so with that in mind, that this information just got brought to light last week, I don't know, it doesn't feel fair on those grounds. And I know that the town has to do what they have to do, listen to all new information that comes up. But that information could have come up and been resolved so much sooner. Beyond that, I want to reiterate something I said a few months ago at a meeting, which is that the town has an opportunity to say yes to attainable housing right now and right here. We have this meeting tomorrow night, this forum to learn more about attainable housing when like all these options are coming up. And so I just want to encourage the town in this situation to be creative. I really love this community. And one of the things I really love is like the last 5 years of coming to almost all of these meetings, the number of times I've seen the town like band together in order to make something work that supports the general plan, supports individuals, supports the community. And I think that there's conversation to be had other than just saying no, because no is harsh and no is absolute. And I just think there's conversations and conditions that have come up beyond that. And I just want to encourage everyone to have conversations and be positive about what can be accomplished by you all.
Thank you. Kip Green. I'm Kip Green. This is my first public comment. I'd like to comment about public comments. Public comments are public comments. The public doesn't have the right to ask questions, interrogate the applicant to help justify their own mind whether it's right or not. That's the commission's job to do that. And I'd like to remind the chairman, whoever that is now and whoever that may be, that these rules need to be enforced. That muddies the water. It's not fair to anyone. And it turns the whole process into a spectacle. That's my public comment. Thank you.
Thank you. And anyone else? Online or in person? We have a few seconds here if anyone's got second thoughts, but I don't see anything in the room, Matt.
Okay, thank you, John. So, 5 more seconds. Okay, and I'm going to make a motion to close the public hearing and reopen the special meeting.
I'll second that.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
John Verrant, aye.
All right. So what I'd like to do is go into some discussion here. So I think this was originally a concept in July of 2021. And I do agree that Dylan and Elena have done a lot of work to get it up to speed here, and that now is our chance to work through the details to see if we can move it forward in a legal matter, in a legal manner towards the town council. So what we need to discuss really is the conditions that we may put on it. I think all of us on the commissioner have been working on it pretty hard, so we're aware of a lot of the things that are coming on. The one, I suppose, substantive issue, which we sort of need to nail down, is the Lower Boulder versus Robeson Ranch issue. So let's start there. So let me lay out some of the conditions that I want to discuss. One is obviously, giving the authority to the fire marshal and following his recommendations would be a condition for approval. And then two would be discussion around the access and maintenance agreement. So I'm going to put that out to the council. I want to hear the commission. I want to hear what everyone's thinking.
This is Colleen. Can I look at the other? I'd like to see the other map, Peg, if you don't mind putting it up.
Which other map, Colleen?
The application map.
Yeah. While you do that, can I make a clarification? So the original plat that was sent to me did say Robeson Lane. I assumed with the engineer making that plat, it was changed. It was sent on Monday. This is where things are in question, and that's why we're reviewing things. And so if that change hadn't been made, it may not have come up. And so that's why we're investigating.
Hey, could you bring up the I guess the amended plat?
Because we get a chance to ask you questions because you're the applicant. You're right.
While she's bringing that up, I do want to bring up a very important procedural issue, and that is that it is, as Lee has always reminded us, subdivisions are forever. We can repeal a ordinance, send a recommended town council change in ordinance. We can rescind a CUP, and once the subdivision's created, it's forever. So we've got to get it right. And as a procedural matter, an awful lot of substantive documents were not available to the commission members until today. So I think that we do need to keep that in mind, that we've not had adequate time to review these. But while Peg's bringing up the plat, I'd like to first address the Lower Boulder Road issue. Whether it's named Robinson Lane or Lower Boulder Road, that road is basically a town right-of-way by historic use. Rod Torgerson said he made a mistake calling it Robinson Lane and has now corrected it. If you could scroll to the left peg. Okay, so there is now been corrected to show Lower Boulder Road, which is the same as the Goldman plat. Now, if you go up to the top where the topo map insert is on the plat.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. I'll give you time.
I've lost it. Keep talking.
Didn't you submit the map? Didn't you submit a map where it shows the border lines the way that it is without the cutouts? Without the cutouts before you got your full 10 acres.
Yeah, that's the Golden plat.
No.
Oh, I see.
See where it's cut out? You guys, that's not the way the map looks anymore. You guys were...
She provided two documents.
That's what I want to see, because we're looking at a map that's not the way that your property. As soon as Peg pulls it up, I'll show you. Because it has to do with what we're talking about as far as streets and driveways, where that road ends.
Right.
John is basically saying that road goes down all the way to Miss Elizabeth's. That road does not go down to Elizabeth's. It goes to the end of Sherlock Valley Farms right there. And then it drives off. And then do they become driveways?
Okay. Could
so okay, just a second. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking at. That's what I want to look at right now too. And I'm not, I don't care about the name of it. I want to know what is a street and what is a driveway.
Okay, could you scroll up to the just a little bit up to the green topo map? That's just about that. Okay, stop there. Okay.
No.
Yeah.
No, I want the bottom. I want the bottom. Okay, but I'm first.
Colleen, let's let John finish his thought here, and then we'll
finish what I was. Okay, so I'm sorry.
So right now, the issue we're trying to figure out is where the town road goes to, where it ends, and where the private driveways start. Okay, I think we're on the same page, but John's getting there in a different way than you are.
Real quick here. So that topo map insert is based on a 1964 USGS map. What that USGS map shows is that in 1964, there was a road going south, turning east, and then going diagonally southeast. But that road goes past where the Hughes Gear Lane property is. So as of 1964, there was a historic road there. The town's rights to Lower Boulder Road are based on the historic use.
Okay.
So this to me is the most evidence is that that's where the a historic road has been for almost 60 years.
Okay, so now can I look at the other map?
Sure. Yeah.
And is that road on this map that we're going to look at right now?
Which road?
With the border line adjustments.
Okay, so I guess Peggy, scroll down for Colleen's.
Okay. There's also a map. The other map, I think it's a page below rather than a page above, doesn't have all the contours on it. It's easier to look at when you're looking at the driveways.
Thank you.
I think it's the next page. This guy right here. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, no. Sort of. Yeah.
So it cuts through our property.
So what I'm saying is that Lower Boulder Road, I mean, maybe you guys understand what I said, but Lower Boulder Road ends right there at the lot line. And then you can see where the dirt driveway goes off to the left, right there. Okay, so I'm just trying to find out where the street is and where the driveways begin, because it seems like that matters. Is anybody following me as far as what I'm trying to see? Yeah. We're talking about driveways and roads.
Yeah.
And so if those are driveways to the houses, Miss Elizabeth's house and up to Elena's and Matt's, because that road ends at Matt and Constance's house. It's their driveway. And so I'm just trying to make those distinctions for myself and for people that are looking at this map.
You are correct. Those are driveways. And this is so typical of Boulder, where physical driving surfaces aren't where the road is supposed to be.
And we talked about how we felt that, because we have been talking about roads, that to leave driveways the way that they were, that would give us the nature of Boulder as far as making public roads or whatever. So that's really all so are you within the parameters of what you're supposed to be doing? I mean, as far as your road being, these are driveways.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
My other thing that I'm wondering is, this subdivision was started before we put in the two new road ordinances. How does that work?
Okay, she should be held to the ordinances in effect on the time she turned in her application.
Okay, so what we're doing is actually looking at the ordinances the way that they were written as we have them now, because the new is not entered into our codification.
No, the new ordinance 22-1 was effective when Judy Drain signed it.
Okay.
American legal runs about 6 months behind putting it into the codified
ordinance. What I'm asking, what I want to know is, are we okay with what the application, how it was submitted with what they're being required?
Yeah.
That's what I'm not quite understanding.
Yeah, me either.
If there's a problem.
Okay.
Or maybe it's not that it's a problem, but why we're talking about it. It's not a problem.
Okay. So
can I just make a comment here?
Yeah, Tina.
I think that each planning commissioner should have a chance to say how they've read this and what they have come to conclusion.
Okay.
All right.
I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay, John, do you want to go?
Well, John.
I'll go last.
Well, what about Matt? And,
well, also Shirley.
Shelly. Don't call me Shirley. It's in the movie. Don't call me Shirley.
Shelly. Sorry, Shelly. I apologize.
It's okay. Hey, I'm with you that I'm confused between Lower Boulder
is a road, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So when it takes off from the road, it's a street.
No, it's a driveway.
So on each lot that they have a house on, that driveway goes to each one of their house? Yeah. I thought a driveway had to go to an actual place.
What are, well, there, could I answer that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm talking. Okay. I mean, I'm just asking.
No, no, it's your turn. What we did in 20, in the ordinance 22-1 was said that subdivisions of up to four lots can be accessed by a private driveway. And the intention of that was two things. One was to not require dedication of a street, okay, which would separate the, which would create a new boundary line on the land and take area away from the lot. And also to exempt these small subdivisions from the very detailed requirements we have in the table of street standards about the width of the street, the slope of the street, the radius of the curves, all those things we said. To keep the informal character of Boulder, you could have a private driveway if it's only serving four lots.
So do you have a house address?
So let me give you some clarification since I've lived here for 15 years, okay? So first of all, Lower Boulder Road, Robeson Road, it doesn't matter what it's named. There's a town road that hits, that goes to that southwest corner of Lot 3A. And then from there, it's a private driveway into the Julian residence and the one that splits off to the north that goes along the border of the Meadowlark subdivision proposed is a private driveway that goes to my residence. Got That's it. My knowledge.
Okay, so I'm just communicating that I personally went there because this was last minute and I wanted to actually see what was going on. And I saw the first house and a second house and then your house, Matt. And there's a little something going on in that one corner that somebody's renting or something. Now, Elena's is right as you come in. Is that correct? That lot right there is where we're trying to work on.
Shelley,
the first lot.
Just to be clear, there are no houses on
our yours yet. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so there's
the white house.
Which there's three there. Right now is what you're counting, right?
There's two houses, three lots right now. So you might be thinking that the hemp farmhouse, that white house on the right, is not part of this subdivision.
Right.
Okay.
But it's part of your driveway.
No, theirs goes straight.
No, theirs goes straight in, and your driveway is right on there in the beginning, and then it roads off. So that's their driveway too. Because that's why I'm trying to make the difference of what a driveway is and a road and all that. Because they have your driveway and their driveway have a common area. Common road.
Common road.
Yes. So that will make it more than four housing.
But a road can service all of Lower Boulder.
Right. But that's not a road. It's a driveway.
No.
It goes off the road and it's dirt and it goes up to their ranch. As you go in, because I went in there.
I'm not going to argue with you, but it's a road.
Shelley?
Right.
I think it goes back to the
It's question. Not Boulder Road that they go on to get to that white house, right?
No. Yes, it is.
If you look at what was the route by...
Why doesn't it say Boulder Road right there going in then?
Because Shelley, I think you're confusing the issue. Let's let some people answer and suss out this question.
That's fine, because I can't vote on something I don't understand. So thank you.
With full respect, okay. So first, this town is full of the problems, as we saw a month ago with Sam Stout and Dave Mock, that where the platted road is and where people have been driving sometimes doesn't match.
Well, they can't get into their house, though.
But if you look at what the historic route was, the Lower Boulder Road, which is the town municipal owned right of way, goes straight east past Elena's property and then turns southeast. Now it looks like that. So the road going straight into that notch out where the house is would be on the historic 50 year old city owned right of way.
But yet there is a question, and it is a valid one, I think, that you are raising, is that where the driveway begins is actually on the Avery property. And that could be material on whether the Averys need to be a party to any agreement.
It would. Because any even on that
even if they're not using it, even if they're not using it for access,
I think
Avery is the property.
I'll come up here and point. So
thank you. Could we shrink that down just a little bit, Peg? Could you shrink that picture down just a little bit? Thank you.
Okay. So the question is, in theory,
thank you.
The Born Boulder Road goes and includes this narrow flag of Atlanta's property. If what they decide if they want to do in the future is come this way, then this property isn't affected. With the dotted line that Rob Ferguson has drawn, which is probably based on what he saw in the aerial photographs, does cut across the corner of this property. So there's two solutions. One is Avery's sign off and say, okay, we're okay with it. Or you realign it so that it goes straight along the historic town right of way and then turns, and then it's turning on your property. But I think it is important that if you intentionally maintain road or maintain driveway, cuts across the corner of the property, then that's another party that does need to sign off paperwork.
Does it really cut across their property? I can't see that.
That's not there.
Right there.
It's
my understanding.
We could look at the lines. The lines all mean something in the legend. We can pull them up in a second. It's always been my understanding that their lot line is where the fence is, and that between the road and the fence is a part of the lower Boulder easement, which is like the fire hydrant is there and everything.
Right.
I believe that's property starts at the fence line.
Okay.
That's been my understanding.
Yeah.
I think that, that dotted line seems to show
that fence line. It doesn't say that that's a property.
Their house is on the other side of that fence line.
So yeah, to my knowledge, there's no issue with Avery.
It's the property.
That white house, right?
That's not the Avery.
Whose is it?
The Owens.
The Owens.
Yeah.
Sugarloaf Valley Farm. Sugarloaf Valley.
Okay. Yeah. And that's part of that whole fence line on the other side, right? It's part of the ranch.
Yeah. On the south side.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. That's another, it's not part of your project.
No.
Right. But that road goes right to it.
Because, and that is the old, that would be the historic Lower Boulder Road that's going right to it. And just as a result, Mark, here, you know, one of the problems of all of Lower Boulder Road is it is not on a dedicated easement.
Yeah.
So you have fence lines at the edge of the road, and often the property line is the center of the road.
Right.
Sometimes the property lines on one side or the other.
Which is
so problematic. But if it is on the historic right of way, whether it's their property or not, that would still be the town right of way. So
yeah,
you know, I do think that Rod Torgerson should have been a lot more careful in getting this the lines in the correct place and noted right, because it is confusing. I think Shelley is totally right.
Peg, if you scroll up to the other, so we pulled this one up to talk about the roads because it was simpler to look at. But if you look at the other one, there's a fence line on there, I believe. And that is their property line.
Yeah, but their house still.
We're talking about the Averys and you're talking about the
Owens.
No, right. Averys, that
right.
Yeah.
Actually, Elena, that fence line would not be a property line. That would be in effect the historic easement of the road. Because the property line, this is the way I say it, so Lower Boulder Road is not on dedicated property. So the property line is where Rod showed it. The fence line is, so I would say if you're doing that, then it's yes, you're coming off the town right of way. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
And don't think I'm trying to fight anything. No. I understand the longevity and everything of this, but being on the planning committee like we are, we've got to make sure, especially when we're setting precedents for everybody, that we're checking off everything.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just want to make the distinction between
the Avery property and the Owen property.
Because I don't have any, I don't know any of these people. I don't have any personal anything on this. So, I'm just trying to be a good planner. Okay.
So John, Colleen, everyone on the commission, is everyone clear about the Lower Boulder Road now that it's the town right of way goes to the edge of the property and then the private driveway is there?
The property line.
I can't hear you.
Just so you know, John's just pointing something out on the map to the people in the room.
Yeah. So the property line down here, fence line here. So I would interpret from what has now been said that the historic town old right of way is that strip south of the fence line, north of the property line, and then with Elena has correctly clarified in my mind that they are branching off from the town right, the town owned right of way. So where does the right of way begin?
I guess that's a lot.
You know, Y intersection. I guess it doesn't matter because it's really there in its beginning where the town ownership is. The town surface rights.
So the road ends where our property begins.
Well, correct. The historic road is not going to go all the way to the house.
Yeah,
you can see is on the old 1964 map went here and then went down this way.
Yeah.
So the town rights go all the way to the house as the town street. Your road is coming off the town road.
And then the driveway is
coming off town.
Yeah.
Road. Right road.
That's quite a waste of time.
That clarifies in my mind. Let me say that again for the record so I can be on the microphone.
Yeah, please. And then. Yeah.
Okay. So with those clarifications and looking closely at the map, I would conclude that Elena's driveway, or the driveway to the four lots actually, begins on the town right of way, and is not on the area controlled by the where the surface is controlled by the Averys. So then they would not need to be a party, but it might be nice to notify them anyway.
Yeah.
And this isn't a petty issue either, because it to contain that road, to keep it up, you got to know who owns it. So it's not a little petty information. Yeah. So just, yeah, okay.
And I mean, I haven't talked to the Avery specifically about the road, but just in response to what you said, I've been in contact with them about this because they're adjoining neighbors and they were aware of the, you know, they got the notice for the hearing and all of that.
Right. If you can get their signature on the agreement, even if it just says that they are a party to the maintaining the road, it avoids any ambiguity. If they don't, we could deal with it. But
So I think we've covered that one. Let's move on to we have the issues of the recommendations of the fire marshal. Does anyone have any comments in the planning commission? We can go one by one on that.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak first?
My thing basically right now is I want to hear from April what we need from Elena and Dylan to make this complete. And if there's anything else that we need to look at, is this a completed application? I didn't see any kind of a zoning. I didn't see anything in writing from you.
Basically. I sent that to Peg when she aboard the original application.
Yeah.
That discussed that you needed to look at the fire requirements. But that I did receive the fire requirements comments. You guys need to look at what
and where. Okay. So this
right.
is
so, it. Okay. So that's what I'm asking, Colleen. So it's a completed application, and it's for us, the planning commission, to discuss the conditions that we might want to put on it for approval. And so one is the question that I just asked is, Pete Denson has, here they are that Peg brought up, these are the recommendations. And so, you know, in my mind, these would be conditions that we'd put on the preliminary plat approval as by authority of the fire marshal. And so I'm wondering if you agree with that, if there are things that need to be changed and so on. So
I don't disagree with Bart. It's already on this. I will say that I do have a couple comments on this, and that is this subdivision is an extension of a subdivision that was already made, and in clarifying the border lines on what is actually happening, the road changed. The road that is accessing your property, Matt, and the driveway, sorry, the drive. When we put together the, I think personally, the Planning Commission has done a lot to deal with this. And when we first put this situation of driveway on, that was basically to make sure that the easement was not part, that the road easement was part of the property, not that, so that this actual division of the property could happen. That's my opinion of how that all happened. I do strongly believe that reading the ordinance and saying that there doesn't, that that the driveway has no relationship to any kind of standard in the table limits that part of, in fact, the fire department is, or the fire marshal is explaining, is that there needs to be some kind of decision on the maintenance of the road, and that it doesn't mean that it is between the people who are now there. It means for the whole subdivision into the future. And so I strongly recommend that the Planning Commission considers that as a conditional use.
And so that would be, Tina, beyond the road access needing to comply to the standards in the attached document, that would be a maintenance agreement. Is that what you're saying?
I think that as a safety, in a safety situation, and as a way of preventing any kind of stupid. We have had so many road issues. Okay, now this is a driveway, but we have had so many road issues that have created problems based on future unknowns, you know, or things that haven't been established. And that I think that the maintenance is part of any kind of decision, and especially in this decision, because it's not only maintenance, it's actually changing the road.
Okay.
You know, the road is changing in the subdivision.
So I do just want to flag something on that. The driveway change.
Do you mean like to bring it up to fire standards, or do you mean the location of it?
The location.
So the location has been signed off from the boundary adjustment. When we made the boundary adjustment, we moved the
right. But that is, yeah. But they're
signed off on by all the adjoining property owners, as well as the Planning Commission and Town Council.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I'll stick with just maintenance.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So Matt, I've got a couple some wording here that Lynn Ellis helped me on earlier today. So we already are discussing the condition that we need a maintenance agreement. And the specific wording that I would like to put out for discussion would be that the applicants provide us at least 5 days prior to the next scheduled Planning Commission meeting, which would be December 1st.
Planning Commission would be December 8th.
What?
Eight.
December 8th.
Five working days before.
Oh, the Planning Commission meeting isn't December
1st. No, I said the Planning Commission is December 8th. Five working days before is December 1st.
Okay.
So we're clear. I'll put working in there. So provide at least 5 working days prior to the next scheduled Planning Commission meeting, a driveway access and maintenance agreement suitable for recording that complies with the fire safety standards, and is approved by all the affected property owners. So that would be a specific wording for a condition.
Okay.
Then discussing now as we've gone on to this driveway, my understanding from Pete is that he wants to see access to the lot 4A in place on the ground. That would be a physical thing that, so that would be done after we make the preliminary approval, but before final approval. That's when you do those on the ground constructions. So another condition would be then that prior to final approval, a temporary driveway and fire turnaround shall be constructed to lot 4A and approved by the fire authority. Then I put in that the Planning Commission acknowledges that the temporary driveway may be relocated and re-inspected by the fire authority when site development and house location are better defined. Does that meet your concern that you don't know where you ultimately want your turnaround?
I think so. Do you mind if I look at it in writing?
Yes, I'll pass that to you.
Thank you.
The other thing that we haven't quite gotten to, although we've gotten alluded to it, is that our preliminary application or our preliminary approval, which really is a construction approval, after that, the applicant needs to do certain things on the ground. One of them is this road. I think we need to discuss what other things the zoning administrator feels need to be done on the ground. And the specific one is, does the well need to be drilled or not before final approval? Because we should at least give the applicant clarity that before they come back for final approval, they know exactly what list of things on their plat have to be done.
And what Matt was saying
on that, I do just want to point out that if we are to require people to drill wells before they can move forward, that's a real barrier for people who are trying to do this. I mean, like if you guys tell us that we can't move forward on this project at the end all be all, we will probably put in a $30,000 well ahead of time.
Okay, so I would agree with you, but I think we need to provide clarity as a commission what that list is. If we say that is that the and that would be closer to historic Boulder practice, that they've shown that they have a water right.
Yeah,
that's all we've asked in the past.
Yeah,
but there was some ambiguity and the question was raised, so I think we should give clarity that if that's not required, we say so.
But I was clarifying because Matt was talking about the fire. If we have any questions about it, the fire marshal will give advisements and so on, but your engineer at the end can be the only one that can sign off the pressure that is given on that water.
Okay.
And on that meter and everything. So you've got to have that done.
Could I clarify on that, please?
That's final then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are two completely separate things.
Yes, they are. That's why
the fire authority is the one who decides where the fire hydrant has to be, whether the fire hydrant was adequately installed, whether the road is adequate width. I am a professional engineer. I know that you rely on the municipal authority to make those interpretations. In this case, the hydrant is an existing hydrant owned by Boulder Farmstead, and Pete has accepted that existing hydrant as acceptable. If a new hydrant was installed, the fire authority says put the fire hydrant here. Boulder Farmstead hires an engineer to size the line and locate the pressure regulating valve and so forth.
That is what I understand, because once those dwellings are there, they have to handle the pressures, right? And as an engineer know that only until that subdivision is put together, how much pressure one hydrant handling five houses as it's planned right now, right? Because it's handling that farm right there.
It's a distance from the property.
Yeah, but it is, you've got to have the engineer sign it off for pressure.
We don't have
the fire authority won't do it. You've got to have it from a stream. You've got to have it from a well. You've got to have the pressure.
I respectfully disagree with you. That is an existing hydrant owned by Boulder Farmstead. That has been inspected by and is considered in compliance.
Right, it is right now, but there's more housing going on.
That doesn't change the requirements for a hydrant. I've read the fire codes very thoroughly.
If that hydrant can't handle that pressure to all those homes, and you can have 100 more homes, right? And that one hydrant can't handle all those homes, you can't have it approved, right? It's just common sense.
No, you don't assume that all 100 homes are on fire at once. The fire code specifies distances from hydrants.
Right.
It specifies a flow based on the types of occupancy. And in Boulder, we do not have things like Walmart supercenters that require more than 1,000 gallons a minute. Those things, but the
fire marshal doesn't sign off on that. The engineer does. He does not.
Shelley, for purposes of where we're at, the authority of the fire marshal. So let's just, you know,
I'm right just now, trying to keep us out of any lawsuits, but that's okay.
I think we're under compliance. And I'd like to, let's move back to the well question, John.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like having a water right is, you know, seems sufficient to me as that's how it's gone. And so I'd like to clarify that if that's going to be a condition or not.
No,
I would say,
I think no.
Is there, between Elena and the zoning administrator, is there anything else physically that needs to be done on the ground other than the putting the road to lot 4A before final approval?
With the whatever the fire marshal or
okay. The road required by the fire marshal is the one thing we know now that has to be done between preliminary and final. Is there anything else?
For us, I don't feel I do. If you guys are fine to accept the lower boulder, I have seen documentation that it's Robinson Lane. I feel like we need to have our lawyer look at it and what the legal names are to make sure we get everything correct on the plats.
I think we can actually pass on how we came to this conclusion. And if there's a legal issue that, I mean, we could send it to the lawyer, but I think we came to the conclusion that it is legal.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to clean up everything.
Right, I agree.
I feel like it's our due diligence to make sure it's labeled correctly. And I feel like our lawyer should review it to document what is the road name. There are two properties with Robinson name. So
are we in agreement that it's a public road, though?
We are, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. This won't get filed with the county for at least a few months.
Okay.
I need to have clarification.
Okay.
Because a lot of our roads are not clarified. Okay. And this is an opportunity for us to clear up these issues.
Okay. So by state law, the county surveyor is the one who handles street names and addresses, and it would not be inappropriate for the applicant to contact the county surveyor and verify what are the official addresses, because that's the ones that actually go into all the databases that Google Maps and everybody else uses, is what the county surveyor has on their database. So it's really not Mark McKiff to get the name right, but it would be the county surveyor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is a street. It's not a driveway. It's a street.
She's asking about the addresses of the four houses on the driveway.
Yeah, and if there's no legal record that it is a public.
We have no legal record on Boulder Road. Right. That is the problem. It's a deep problem. And all we have is 60 years of historic use.
And that's why I kind of want to get clarification. On this flat, I'd like to get that clarification.
This is just a request on my part. I can understand that perspective completely. If the Planning Commission is in agreement that it's a public road and it serves our purposes for this subdivision, I wonder if that could be a task that the town takes on.
rather than us. I understand that the Lower Boulder Road is a legal nightmare. I'm not sure that that is my area to delve into.
Would that be fair to have you contact the county surveyor? And it would also be needed that we need to agree what the addresses are for emergency access to your lot.
Yeah, those are going to be determined at the final, when it's...
Well, the county surveyor is the one who assigns those, so like...
Right, so I think we'll find out when the address is
assigned. Yeah. So you could then take on working with the county surveyor, because we do now have this inconsistency between Robinson Lane and Lower Boulder Road for addressing.
I guess what I'm asking, just to clarify, is that piece be worked out separately, and maybe someone tell us what the answer is and we'll put it on the final plat, but... I'm not sure that that's our burden. I understand Lower Boulder's a mess, but it's been a mess for so many years, accessing so many houses.
But that, I'll agree. If the Planning Commission is saying that this is a public road, I'm not completely clear if that is the case. So that is my question.
Your position is legitimate, because it's never been adjudicated, as far as I know. It is purely a historic use by, it's a right by historic use. It has not been adjudicated, and that is the mess we have with Lower Boulder Road. But I'm relying on the fact that since 1964 or whatever prior time that road came into existence, but for at least 60 years, that's the alignment of the road that existed.
So
say that is a public road currently, they can move forward with that. It would be my responsibility to figure out the cleanup and everything, but I am not. I would still want more clarification, but you guys are making the final decisions. So
I respect that.
So in order to keep progressing forward, I'd like to, and maybe before a motion comes up, let's hone down the conditions that the, unless there are any that I've missed, that the commission wants to put on this preliminary application.
Let's have Elena, if you want to comment on that, probably what we'll go up.
Two things come up for me. The schedule note saying if the access agreement is received by December 1st, the planning commission can vote on December 8th. I'm wondering if we don't, because we're working on this with Joanne Elizabeth, and they, their lawyer sent us we will have to get a lawyer. This might take us longer than by December 1st. So I guess what I'm wondering is just if this can be extended into January or as soon as we have it. I just want to make sure it's not like December 1st.
That's why I said it's 5 days before a regularly scheduled plan. Okay. 5 working days before a regularly scheduled planning.
The December 1st date. I just wanted to be sure that that wasn't the deadline.
Yeah.
I might not get myself a full aware by then. The other thing, at the end of this condition four, the Planning Commission acknowledges that the temporary driveway may be relocated and reinspected by the fire authority when site development and house location are better defined. My only question there is that saying that we, like when I choose where my house goes, I can request from the fire authority to have it changed, or does that mean the fire authority can request it from me?
Well, the fire authority would request it, would suggest this basically, and come up with a plan with whatever, wherever your house is. Right?
Okay. So like we would relook at it together.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, and that was, I put that in because you had expressed the problem that you don't know where your house will be.
Yeah.
So I said, well, then an acceptable thing was run your driveway to the lot line and have a turnaround.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
And Pete was willing to sign off on that. Okay, I could read some specific makeable.
I'm sorry. Can I just clarify that when we're talking about around maintenance, is this includes everybody in the subdivision, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. They need to come up with an agreement that all four property owners sign off on. And Linda's right, this may take more. I figured, but we're giving you 5 days before the meeting to get it in. Yeah. Okay. Matt, I'm ready to put a motion in with specific conditions.
All right.
Okay. So then condition, and my recommendation is that we do not do preliminary approval tonight, but we, because we have a substantive thing. So we would not vote on the preliminary approval until after condition one is taking place. And that's the at least 5 working days prior to a scheduled planning commission meeting, a driveway access and maintenance agreement that is approved, suitable for recording, and that complies with the fire safety standards.
So, John, sorry to interrupt. So can, what's the substantive issue that we can't put a condition on to vote it forward tonight with those conditions in place?
By the ordinance, the maintenance agreement needs to be approved by the town. And until we see what the maintenance agreement is, we don't know what we're approving. So, you know, so we need to, you know, we really need to see that agreement and see that everybody signed off on it and make sure that what they wrote makes sense and doesn't put the town in jeopardy and so forth. So I think we really need to see that before we give preliminary approval. Otherwise, we're really not doing our job under the ordinances.
Can you show me how the ordinance requires the agreement, the driveway agreement from us?
Okay. 152.041H3. And I know that you disagree with this, Elena, but most judges will say that we exempted only one specific thing in that ordinance. That doesn't mean everything else is exempted.
Can you say the ordinance number again?
Okay. 152.041H. Three. And I realize it says all streets proposed to be created shall identify a permanent method of street maintenance. If the proposed street is not proposed for dedication to the town, or if the town is unwilling to accept dedication, an appropriate method for long-term maintenance of the private street must be proposed for approval by the town council. Acceptance of the dedication of a street is at the discretion of the town council. Now, I will admit that I did a bad thing. When I wrote that ordinance 2022-1, we addressed the problem of the lot area, and we specifically exempted driveways from the table of street standards H4. This long table of street standards. Mm-hmm. I had created an ambiguity because I did not go through and make sure that our definition of driveways was totally consistent with the uses of road and streets and elsewhere in the ordinances. Mm-hmm. Now, neither Lee Nellis nor I is a lawyer or a judge, but we discussed this. And what lawyers get paid for is one could argue, and I would testify in court, my intent in writing the ordinance was to only exempt driveways from the street standards. So your lawyer could argue that, well, no, they actually exempted everything. That's what lawyers are paid big bucks for.
Right.
So if you would like to argue with the town about this and spend at least a year going through district court to argue we don't have the authority to make you do a road agreement, you are most welcome to do so. But that certainly would not be as efficient as getting a road maintenance agreement.
Can I just also make the comment that, yes, the amount of effort to go into a road agreement that is actually agreeable for all of the subdivision owners should be public. It's the way that it's passed on. And the way that it's passed on is it has to be part of the subdivision plat. And so I feel like that is an important part. And the road itself needs to be passable without obstruction right now for a fire truck to go in and out or whatever the fire code exactly is. It does not require any kind of surfacing or unless the fire truck can't get to the property, that's all it requires.
So my question is simply, we're working on a driveway agreement. The question is, can it be a condition the way that the fire standards are a condition so that we can move forward with this tonight rather than wait on the vote?
Okay. Because it is, so it'll go to the town council once you've got the conditions covered, and then they will make the final decision. Is that what you're seeing?
I guess we should talk about that. We should talk about the timelines of all the conditions. We can wait till we do preliminary approval with the town until we have the agreement. I think we just like the idea, you know, there's months between these meetings and it would be nice to move forward with it. We are working on it. It also is not entirely clear in 22-1 that a private driveway does require.
Well, as I say, if you want to take us to court,
I'm not going to take you to court, John. I'm not going to take you to court. And I don't want to get into that. Hold on. I don't want to talk I don't want to get in a large argument about this. Well, I don't want to take the town to court. I'm not going to take the town to court. What I'm asking of you is because this is unclear and it could easily be interpreted, and I have been interpreting it this way since we passed it, that a private driveway does not require an agreement. I agree with your recommendation. It just doesn't feel like a requirement to me because of this. I'll do it. I am doing it.
Well,
so could it be a condition rather than a reason to delay the vote?
Given that the importance of this, and the ordinance does say it has to meet the Wildland Urban Code, which implies that the road not be maintained. It can't just be created and then abandoned. I think we need to see that the agreement meets the fire code and that everyone has agreed to something reasonable. If you guys all, for example, said, well, we're going to expect the town to maintain the road and you all sign off on it, no, that's not going to be acceptable to the town.
Okay, so I don't think the town would take it either.
That's right.
And so
you need to show us an agreement that we could say, yes, this is acceptable to the town.
Yeah.
There is also another section here that I could quote in the ordinance. Again, it says road and street maintenance, and it doesn't say driveway. That was the bad. This is why. But the point is, I think we need to see exactly what you guys have agreed to. Make sure that everybody has agreed to it.
Right. I would be curious to hear from everyone else because at this point, until it's part of the application packet, it's not it's ambiguous. So I would be, I get what you think, and I would be curious to hear.
I would like to say that I would send this on to the town with these recommendations or these requirements to have, what are they called? Conditions. To have, and the town will not pass it until it's, and we don't have any conditions on maintenance except for the fire marshal. So the fire marshal probably would have to sign off public safety. And basically I think the request that I had is about public safety, not necessarily that we're asking.
So Tina, do you need to see that specific agreement before you're willing to vote it forward? Is that all right to ask? No,
I'm saying that I think I would feel confident in sending this on as a conditional use for the final.
Okay. I'm in agreement actually there as well.
I kind of disagree because this is a planning commission and you guys are on it. Yep. And to have something outstanding going forward, you know.
But it's not a clear requirement of the application. I understand that everyone thinks it should happen. And
I
can
see it's pretty clear, but
I think at some point the planning commission can take the opportunity to make it more clear. And I think when they do that, it should probably be listed on the requirements of the application packet. But right now it is not.
Is this going to make John, through you, is this going to make a difference in how they go forward right now? That we pass it.
She Elena is in a rush, but it is our job to protect the interests of the town. And I do want to point out, we also have a procedural thing,
right,
that many of these documents were not available till today. There's a reason why we asked for a complete application 10 days before, which is to allow us and the public to look at the documents, to analyze questions like you've raised, which you've raised very valid questions. So that's, we also have a procedural question that the application was, although the zoning administrator said it was complete in the sense that a document existed, the documents that we're actually approving were not available 10 days before. So we also have a procedural thing.
Okay.
So in my case, when it comes to a vote, I'm going to vote no.
Okay.
Can I clarify something? The final plat is adopted by the or is agreed upon by the town, and until they say yes, this doesn't go through. Is that correct?
She can't record. That's correct.
She can't record. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Colleen. Would you share what you think?
You know, the whole thing is the Planning Commission is an advisory group that we do the best we can to advise people, and then we move it on to the town council. And so that basically is my comment. We've done as much as we can. And then I personally would like to see it go back to the town so that they can decide what they want. If they want something from us, then they're going to send it back to us.
Yeah.
We get so caught up on having to have everything perfect before we send it to the town. And it seems like we never get it perfect. So we never get it perfect, and then they send it back to us because they look at things, seems to be that not only what we're looking at, but you're looking at five other different people that are going to have things to say. My thing is that we make sure that we clarify everything that we've been trying to talk about tonight so that it clearly goes to the town council and shows that we've been working on it and give them a chance to send it back to us.
I think what's the
difference between sending it with a condition and sending it, waiting for that condition to actually be?
I think John wants to see the actual maintenance agreement. The thing that is that I agree more with Tina and Colleen on that is, as funny as it sounds, I'm going to see that maintenance agreement because I'm a part of it as well as, you know, so to me, it's not an issue because I'm going to do the right thing. And, you know, so.
And the condition.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think Colleen's right. I think right now we just need to clarify the conditions, which I know John is on, but I would be more in favor of moving this on rather than standing it up again. I think I feel secure in the conclusions that we've come to.
Can I make one quick comment about something you said?
Yes.
Just to point out, like Matt said, he's going to do the right thing. This agreement is going to be made between two planning commissioners and one town council member. We all want the best interests of the town. Dylan and I would just like to move forward. I don't feel like we're in a rush. We brought our concept plan over a year ago. This has been moving.
That's why I feel so bad.
And I mean, it's not your responsibility to make sure it goes quickly for us, but I don't feel like I'm in a rush. I've been working on this. I have a full-time job plus. I have been working this. These applications are very extensive and take a lot of time. We've been working on this for a really long time. We feel we've met what's required of us now. We're happy to meet what's required of us by the time it gets approved by the town council, but we'd like to move forward tonight. And we think that that's reasonable.
I'd like to just make a clarification. John said that the application was complete. It came up that they made changes this week, and then issues have come up since those changes.
Yes.
So they made those changes. I was not sent those changes, and so that's where this complication is coming of you saying it didn't meet the deadline. They did originally meet the original application, did meet the deadline.
So can I ask you a question, John?
Yeah.
So can you
say what we would, how we would, I mean, there, if they put a maintenance program together based on the fact that it's a safety issue and it's the maintenance is there, what are we looking at? What are the criteria in which we look at it to make sure that it's something that we have to be looking at it again before the town looks at?
Okay. I think it's the same thing as that when we look at the plat, we make sure that all the details are correct. We have an example with Deer Ranch where a maintenance agreement was proposed that we said was totally unacceptable. That was the one where he said every lot owner is going to just take care of their own, and the people at the end of the road are going to get all the burden of maintaining the heaviest traffic. So we said, no, that's not that. We said in our notes to Sean Owens that maintenance agreement was not acceptable. We would not approve it. I don't think they're going to come up with something so bad, but I do feel, as Lee keeps emphasizing, subdivisions are forever.
Yeah. I think the question is, what is the planning commission going to review versus the town council? Do you feel the town council would not be able to review the maintenance agreement?
The town council's, our job is to make a complete recommendation. If we're doing our job, the town council should look and say, yep, here's the letter from the zoning administrator saying planning commission recommends approval.
Okay.
How can we recommend approval on a blank check? We're asking the town council to do what's our job, which is to review these documents.
Do you have any guidelines for us of what makes a bad versus a good maintenance agreement?
Well, I sent you a draft of one.
As a
starting point.
Yeah.
But I think you have to do your own site-specific agreements, yeah. You know, but I think it is just like anything else. We need to protect the property rights, not just of you, yeah, but of the adjacent property owners. Mm-hmm. So we need to be sure that Elizabeth and Matt have signed off.
Right.
And
the town council can't make sure.
Well, it's our job to make a complete recommendation. So I think, you know, it would, you know, you're arguing about this and not arguing with it.
Yeah.
You're talking less a month.
I'm going to make the road agreement. I'm not arguing with you. And we know you are. That's the thing. Yeah. We can't.
What was your motion? Could you read what that?
Okay, so as I had the motion now, the condition would be to provide at least 5 working days prior to a scheduled planning commission meeting, a driveway access and maintenance agreement suitable for recording, so, and that complies with the fire safety requirements, that is approved by all affected landowners.
Okay, so those are the requirements, and I still am stuck on if there is a maintenance decision made by Elizabeth and all of the people in the subdivision, right?
Okay.
If that is made and they agree upon it, mm-hmm, and they get the fire authorities write off on it,
yeah,
then it seems that is the requirements that we would actually be looking at when we looked at
that. Would be it, yes. That,
so could that be a condition?
We're making it a condition that they get that to us, but I don't think it's fair for us to punt to the town council to say, to check to see they did it. That's our job, is to make sure that all these land use things are done and correct, and we recommend it to the town council as it's done. Not saying, well, we did all but this one item in town council, you need to do the last piece of making the recommendation planning should have made.
Plus you're making a precedence. If they can do it, then another project can come through. And they said, well, you pass this off. This is nothing compared to that one too. This is our job, right?
Okay, can I also make this comment? And this is to you.
Yeah.
And Dylan. is this process has taken a long time, but there's been a lot done for this process. Certainly. And I think that saying that you're not willing to do two more months or whatever to come to us with something that, you know, is agreeable and we can pass it on to the town and there's nothing for the town to say no about. I mean, what's the difference?
We're not, to be clear, we're not saying that we won't. We're requesting that it can go through tonight as a condition and asking the question if that's possible. I'm not saying that I won't do it. I'm saying that given the unclear nature of this 22-1,
but that's not the condition that we have before us.
That's all.
As a planning commission.
No, no, I'm just saying that, you know, what are we arguing about? Are we arguing about that? We're arguing about time, aren't we? I mean, we're arguing about the process that.
I don't feel like we're arguing. I feel like I'm asking questions about how to move.
No, but I mean, but we are arguing. I mean, I'm discussing this.
We're not arguing.
I guess
we have three things on the table right now, right? We have the agreement that they haven't all signed off on. We have a thing that April has gone through. And then we have the third one of time that the paperwork was given. It was also changed. So we have three issues.
I don't agree, but that's,
we have two issues.
Two issues.
I don't understand what the third one.
Well, she's talking about that there were changes to the application Monday, and I did not review those. And
we weren't giving them
to review those or accept those changes. And so, you know, even if they're just additions, it needs to kind of be reviewed of what's minor changes or whatever. And that was not done. So it's like, I think that's what she's referring to.
I see. I thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
So right now we would have two conditions. One I read as a motion, and then we have agreed just on the minutes that there is no other infrastructure other than putting in a road to lot 4A. And so we have two conditions. One which would, what I'm arguing should take place before we do preliminary approval, and one which obviously has to do before final approval, which is to have the road in place. I think I've spoken enough. I'm sort of ready to call the question.
So have you made the motion, John?
Okay, so I will make as a motion that. And I will get these to Peg in writing so that she did, for clarity. Condition one, that which is to provide at least 5 working days prior to a scheduled planning commission meeting, a driveway maintenance and access agreement suitable for recording that complies with the fire safety standard and that is approved by all affected owners. And the implication there being then that after that is condition is met, we would do the vote on the preliminary approval. So I'll make that as part of the motion that vote after. And then the second condition is the one that prior to final approval, a temporary driveway and fire turnaround shall be constructed to lot 4A and approved by the fire authority. The Planning Commission acknowledges that the temporary driveway may be relocated and we'll call it re-approved by the fire authority when site development height and house location are better defined. So I have put that out as a motion. Do I have a second, I guess?
I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay, so now.
So any last discussion before the vote on that, on the motion that's been brought to the table?
I would say that the actual development or the road being put in there is not what I think needs to be required before it goes on to the town council. I think my most
I think it just needs to have clear maintenance before it goes on to the county.
So Tina, you're saying that you don't think the road needs to be actually built, but just the maintenance agreement around it? I'm not following.
And the maintenance agreement, I would say, has, you know, something to the extent of how it's going to happen. And the maintenance includes that road, the change of the road, that the road is not there, but you have a plan for it. And what and how you as a group are going to maintain that.
Could you clarify by going to town council? Because it goes to town council twice. After we get preliminary approval, it goes to town council. And they vote on preliminary approval, which is the construction approval. Then after all the physical infrastructure is in place, which in this case is the road access, complying with the standards in the attached document, the condition that he put in. Once that's done and inspected, then the town council again votes on it as final approval.
So they vote on it twice?
They vote on it twice. And under our ordinance, it's stated that that final approval is ministerial. And what that means legally is they really don't have any discretion to change conditions at that point. If she has done what was approved at the preliminary stage, they have to give it approval. But they do have the final say to create the subdivision. So it goes to town council twice.
I am so confused. Okay, so it goes to town council twice.
Right.
So I'm still confused on why it's coming back to us.
Yeah, that's where my issue is too.
It doesn't come back to us. So you need to read 152, which is the final subdivision application, where all that is.
At the end of all, the end of everything that they've done.
Right.
So yeah, I get that.
So. I've read it three times now, the wording. I'll give it to, and I'm going to give it to Peg in writing so she has it. Which one is confusing? I'll be glad to read it again if you want.
I would love to see it with my eyes if you don't mind, but I don't know how long time.
Okay, if you can read my scribblings here. Okay. So, you know, my feeling is our last chance really to make sure things are right is when we take the vote on the preliminary approval and send it to the town council with a recommendation to approve.
So we're ready to vote.
Say that again, John. Sorry, I missed it.
Okay, so I was clarifying that our last chance to make sure everything is right in this application, which means is when we take the vote on preliminary approval and send a recommendation to town council to approve it. That's our last say. After that, town council approves it, and then Elena does the things that have to be done according to the plat, which in this case is basically the road. And then that goes back to the town council for final approval. It goes actually to zoning administrator and then to town council, but we don't really vote on it again. Town council votes twice. We don't.
So, yeah, I'm with Tina. I'm not following. Why do we still have to see it? I think it's at this point, the conditions are clear and we can send it to the town council. They have to go through several decisions with it, looking at it. And we've done all the work that has needed to be done.
I think we have a difference of opinion here, and I've said my piece of why. So I'm ready for a vote.
Me too.
Okay, all in favor.
So for clarification, we are voting on the condition one with the note that PC will vote on preliminary approval after condition one is met. and the condition, second condition being the road. So that's actually the motion we have on the floor. If someone wants to amend that, so the right procedure, Matt, would be if someone disagrees with that. So if we vote yes, that says condition one applies. After condition one applies, we take a vote on the preliminary approval, and then condition two applies in any case at final approval. If someone disagrees with that, they need to make a motion to amend my motion, and we need to pass that motion to change that wording.
Okay, this is what I'm gonna do. I amend that we do not make this decision tonight and we do it at the next meeting.
I'll second that. Motion to table is in order.
Okay, so we have a second. Okay.
Okay, all in favor?
Colleen Thompson, aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
John Brath, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Oh my God.
You got to set the hook. Thank you, Tisha. Okay. Could we do a motion to adjourn?
Last thing to say is that's all I have. So
the next meeting, we have all our stuff together.
December 8th.
Right.
We will cover the bases and go over it then. So I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Shelley?
Aye. Shelley Price, aye.
John Brath, aye.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
But I feel, it makes me sick.
We shouldn't
this long.